Michael Petry is an artist, author, and director of the Museum of Contemporary Art in London. He is here to talk about his new book, The Word is Art, and give us his spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Charlotte.
Tell us about your new book.
Well, as you mentioned, it's called The Word is Art, and it looks at artwork which is primarily focused on text. So that text can be in the form of words as paintings, words as sculptures, as installation, new media, or even artists who are using physical books to make artworks. So it's a very broad global survey, and it includes artists literally from all over the world, and is perhaps the book of mine that contains the most number of different languages, because obviously artists from all over the world are making work within their own language, and so we tried to give as broad a view as possible. So there are artists in the book who speak Mandarin, there are artists who are using Arabic, and even within Arabic, there are artists from Iran, Iraq, Lebanon, Tunisia, who are, of course, all using Arabic writing, but they're using it in very, very different ways. So we're seeing a really broad diversity of languages within the book, as well as a broad diversity of the artists themselves. They come from countries from all over the world. They come from different genders, sexualities, and it's always my aim with these books to try to get as close to possible a 50-50 male-female content, because obviously there are as many women making work as men, and so I really aim to try to get as close as possible to that with representation.
What was your inspiration for creating it?
Well, as with all of the books that I've done in the past, and that includes installation art and The Art of Not Making or Nature More, my book on still life, it comes from the work that I'm making at the moment as a visual artist. Often what happens, as with installation art, you know, I was making installation art at the end of the 80s and beginning of the 90s, and people had no idea what it was, and people were continuously asking me, what is installation art? And I was always looking for a book to show them, you know, because I thought that would be the easiest way, especially my mother. She was always asking me, and I couldn't find a book. And in the end, I realized I had to write that book. So I did. And that's kind of been the way with all the books that I've done, that they come from the work I'm making and people wanting to know about that work and me finding that there wasn't really a context for it. So a lot of the work I'm making right now focuses heavily on text, and I was looking around to see who else was doing it, and of course a whole world of people presented themselves, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, just even a few years ago, people were predicting the death of the book, the death of writing, because of the internet, and actually the opposite has happened in that, you know, everybody is now an author. People are writing on Facebook, on Twitter, on all sorts of different platforms, but they're having to write. And what's great about that is that it's meant that artists have used text and brought it into focus as artwork. And that's a really exciting thing when you see it from so many different languages. I mean, in the book, we even have some works that only exist on the web. And in the book, there's a QR code, and if you use a smartphone, you can scan the QR code, and the GIF will come up on your phone. And those works only really, truly exist in that kind of digital form.
What do you hope to accomplish with your work?
So, certainly, the way that I work, which is to make artworks, I'm looking for something very different from what happens when I put on the hat of an author. When you make artwork, you are, as an artist, trying to put forward your own personal view of whatever your artistic motive is. And that comes from within, and that is a unique voice. When you're writing a book about a whole bunch of other artists, which may include yourself, you then have to be much more objective about what it is you're doing. And that's why I mentioned earlier, you know, I really aim in these books to be as representative as possible. As an artist, you don't have to represent anyone but yourself. And so what you do as an artist is completely the opposite of what you do as a responsible curator or as a responsible author.
What is your personal commitment to LGBTQ civil rights?
Well, you know, I'm one of the ancients who's been around fighting for LGBTQ rights since the early 80s, and I've been involved in so many different ways over the years. I mean, I consider myself to be queer, because I think that is a broader term that, for me, represents who I am and what I think. And part of that commitment as a queer who is an artist and who is also an author and a curator is to try to bring the work of queer artists to the foreground of the art world. We only have to think back a few years to realize, you know, that LGBTQ artists were very marginalized, and that's still the case for many people in the LGBTQ movement. I, every year, curate a Pride exhibition in London, which I really hope to introduce LGBTQ artists, not just to that community, but to the straight community. And I work within all the structures that are available, whether that's museums or the corporate structure, to get that recognition for LGBTQ people, because I think that what's at issue in the broader political sphere is this notion of fear, fear of others. And of course, that fear is not limited to the general public. It's also in the art world. I mean, many people who are not kind of at the coalface of the art world think, oh, the art world, oh yes, it's so open and liberal. No, the art world is still incredibly homophobic. And most artists who are LGBTQ will tell you of experiences they've had, which are in the last year or two, which are incredibly homophobic from the institutions. Because those institutions, whether they're museums or universities, they are very slow to change. I mean, they're very slow to acknowledge that they need to change. And so I also work, you know, in that sense from the academic position where I'm, you know, confronting other academicians about their knowledge or lack of knowledge about LGBTQ history. And if those people don't know about our history, then it's no wonder that the general public doesn't know about that history. And any number of times that I have been invited as a queer academician to talk about LGBTQ artists, and I mention really famous people like Robert Rauschenberg or Jasper Johns or Cy Twombly, and I give that history of their sexual relationships, their amorous relationships, their relationship as artists, I have an unbelievable number of heterosexual art historians who say to me, God, I didn't know that. I didn't know that those artists were gay. Or Louise Nevelson, you know, as a woman who is kind of shrouded in mystery, who is very much seen not to be sexual in any way, or that her work is kind of denuded of any romantic history. Because those things are not talked about within the art world, because the art world is first and foremost connected to the art market. And the art market doesn't really care whether you're gay or straight or whatever. They just simply want to sell things. And it doesn't help to sell works by famous gay artists like Francis Bacon if you're trying to sell those to Russians, or you're trying to sell those Francis Bacons to people in Islamic countries where being gay can get you killed. You know, the art market is not interested in that. They simply want to sell that Francis Bacon painting for $40 million if they can. They're not there fighting for inclusion of historical information. And it's the academy and the museological world's role to keep that information at play and keep that information foregrounded. And yet, as we move into a world where the academy and the institutions depend on money from the market, they are less inclined to foreground that information.
How do you see our LGBTQ community moving forward with this backlash of conservative world leaders?
I think the only way we can actually move forward is to work at removing the fear. And that's where being out as an artist, out as a historian, out as an author is really important. Because the more people who know about your sexuality and know that actually that's only part of your life, that, you know, you are a rounded person, that you're a cousin, you're an uncle, you're all those things that heterosexual people are, and more, the less afraid people are of you, unless, of course, they have an agenda to generate fear. I'm specifically thinking, you know, the right wing, the evangelicals, who are seeking actively to spread fear, and not just of the others in a sexual sense. I mean, they're spreading fear around migrants, women, everything. I mean, you know, and so I would say what any one individual can do is be as open as possible. And, you know, I'm astonished by the fact that there are kids who are 13, 14, 15 who are out in high school. You know, that would not have happened in my time. I was out as bisexual as someone at university in the late 70s, early 80s. But that was, in a way, even a dissembling of the truth, because while I was bisexual at that point, I was only bisexual because I was actually queer. I was gay. And I, you know, in the late 70s, being gay in Texas was a pretty tough call, as well as being a punk. I mean, it was a very weird time, and it was in many ways much more dangerous on an individual level. But society has moved on to the point that there are young kids, maybe not in Texas, who are out in high school. And I applaud them, and I think it's great. And I would only say, you know, to kids, you know, you have to be careful, because the tragedy about America is your parents can still force you to have conversion therapy in America. And so if you're in high school and you come out as gay and your parents can basically abuse you, it's child abuse. There's no way that we should talk about it as anything other than child abuse. And you can be forced into that situation. So I would say, as with all things about being out, you have to be careful. I'm still careful. My partner, who I have a civil partnership with in London, and on the whole, we had no worry, but there are places in London where we would not hold hands because we could be attacked. Now, that's a terrible indictment of any civilization, that two people who love each other, who are married, can't even hold hands, but that is the case. So you have to be careful, and I think that's just about being sensible. As a kid, I would always say, be sensible. When you're 18, absolutely. Be open, be out. Your life will be so much better for that.
How can people get information about you and your new book?
The best way, I would say, is online. They can go to my website, which is michaelpetrie.com, or they can go to Thames & Hudson and their website. Thames & Hudson have published 3 books for me in the last 10 years, and all of those books are still available on their website, as well as obviously any of the other online possibilities. And that's a really great start. And if you're lucky, you may be in a city where some of my work is in one of the museums and you can actually get to see the work.
What other projects are you working on?
In 2019, I'll be involved in a couple of really interesting international exhibitions. One, which is a Biennale in Honolulu in Hawaii, which I'm very much looking forward to in March because it's really cold in London at that time. And then later in the year, I will be involved in something called the Joshua Triennale, which is every 3 years, an exhibition where artists are going to be making special projects for the desert, which I think is going to be another really wonderful project. And then I will be having a solo show of my work with one of the commercial galleries that represents me in Houston at the Hiram Butler Gallery. And then I will be doing an awful lot of talks about the word is art at different museums and book fairs.
Is there a question you wish people would ask you?
The question I think that I would like someone to ask me is, why are labels at museums so homophobic? And I would say, because institutions are still essentially homophobic. So if you have a painting of Picasso's that is of one of his lovers, say Dora Maar, it will say, you know, painting of Dora Maar, and then it will tell you that he was in a sexual and romantic relationship with her, because that label is there to give you biographical information about Picasso to help make you as the viewer open up to them to say, oh, he's just a bloke like me, you know, there's his girlfriend. What those labels tend not to do is to add the misogynistic element to his behavior, the fact that he beat her, that often she was crying in the paintings because he made her cry in real life. It doesn't tell you any of that. And equally, Picasso might sit right next to a Francis Bacon or a Robert Rauschenberg, and it will not tell you anything about his life, that he was gay, who his lovers were, even when it's a portrait by Rauschenberg of one of his lovers, or one of Twombly of his lovers, or Jasper John of his lovers. So that biographical information is edited out. And that's really a dangerous thing for history. And then, of course, that's why I wrote the book Hidden Histories, because I wanted to keep those histories for future generations. Because if we don't know our own history, then how will we expect future generations to know it, and future generations of heterosexual people? And our history is so fragile because it's not taught in school textbooks. If we don't demand that supposedly left-wing institutions like museums and the academy hold this information up to public view, then it's just going to disappear.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
At this time of the holidays, I think it's really important because, you know, so many people have difficult relationships with their birth families, but most of us, if we're lucky, we have our own true selected families, the people who are around us because we love them and they love us. And, you know, that's what I would say to people is, that's a really positive thing that will come to your life if you're open about it, that you will find all of those people who will support you, and this is a great time of year to be thankful for them.